Picture this. 8 young women who are on the track, each of them in their running uniform, each of them with their running shoes on, and the starter comes and says, "Ladies, take your place." 8 lanes are filled. These young women are limbered up. The starter says, "On your mark." They go down into the blocks. They are set. The starter raises his pistol. The girls go up. The starter fires his pistol, and 8 girls leap out of the block, and away they go. They are running as fast and as directly as they can, straight to the goal, straight to the challenge. Run the race. Run the race. "Guide my feet while I run this race. Guide my feet while I run this race. Guide my feet while I run this race, for I don't want to run this race in vain." You and I are facing giants in our lives all the time. And it's usually not one giant. There's usually more than one out there. These giants are in our relationships, and they're in our finances, and they're in our health, and they're in our families, and they're in our communities and in our churches. We are surrounded by the giants and the challenges. Now, those challenges are good because they help us and force us to focus and to grow. What we need are those giants. But it's not just that we need the giants. We need a way to help bring those giants down. Here's what I want you to take home. God has equipped you in ways that you don't even recognize to fight the giants. And those giants, with the help of God, can be brought down. So let's talk about David and Goliath. Now, I don't know about you, but I was raised with this story that says that poor little David, the underdog, poor little David, there was no way that he was going to escape the crushing power of this giant. There was no way that he was going to leave that battlefield alive. Oh, let's go into that story. And we're going to turn it upside down and inside out. And you're going to walk out of here realizing that this story is not what you thought it was. Here's the deal. The Philistines came up. They were an organized army of multiple cities that came up from the south to do battle with Israel. Israelites put together an army, and they came down under the command of King Saul, who was at that time unifying Israel. And they met south of Jerusalem. The Philistines came up on one ridge, and the Israelites came down to the south on another ridge with a large valley in between, and they were stuck. Neither army could move, because if you came off of your ridge down into the valley, when you started up to the next ridge, you were a sitting duck. There is no way that an invading army, that an attacking army, could survive that ridge. They were stuck. And so for a month and a half, they were just out there facing each other. And every morning, the armies would line up, and they would shout at each other, beat their chests, and bang their weapons to let the other one know how tough they were. And nothing would happen. Well, the Philistines sent out a solo combatant, Goliath. Now, this was a fairly common practice. Rather than having both armies fight it out, they would send each a solo combatant out. They would fight and would resolve the battle. If you were in Israel's army, you think you'd be volunteering to go there? Nobody wanted to do this. Okay? Let me tell you about Goliath. Goliath was the soldier. I don't know if he volunteered or if they commanded him to go out into solo combat. Now, what you need to know is that in those days they measured by cubits. A cubit was the space from the tip of your finger to your elbow. Now, of course, this is not very accurate because different people have different lengths of arms. But today, we basically say, it was 18 inches. Now, we don't know how tall Goliath was, because one translation of the Old Testament says that he was 6 cubits and a span. A span was the distance across your hand. But another version of the Old Testament, another translation says 4 cubits and a span. So here's what we know. He was somewhere between 6'9" and 9 foot. All right? Now, it doesn't matter which of those it was, because the average height was much, much less in that day and age. Goliath was a giant. Now, why would he be so tall? The answer is because something's wrong. Something inside of Goliath was not right. The tallest man that we have on record, the Guinness Book of World Records, said was a 24-year-old man who was 8 foot 11. And when he died, he was still growing. Many of you will remember a few years ago, Andre the Giant. He was 7 foot 4, 450 pounds. The thing that both of those men had in common was a tumor on their pituitary gland. Pituitary gland is the gland that puts out the hormones that help you to grow. And so when you have a tumor on it, that gland is stimulated and it keeps going and keeps going and keeps going. We very, very strongly suspect that this is what was going on inside of Goliath. It doesn't matter if he was 6'9" or 8'9". He was somewhere in that area, and that gland, he probably was a young man. He probably was in his 20s. Young, huge, strong. Now, why would I make this speculation? I want to point out a couple of things. And here again, if you have the chance to go through 1 Samuel 17, I want you to do it with a pencil or pen in hand so that you can move slow and absorb some of the details that are in there. It's fascinating. All right. Twice, not once, but twice, inside the story, it says this. Goliath's shield bearer led him onto the field. Now, I've always just ignored that. Who cares? But wait. I'm going to combine that with two other statements. And when Goliath was on the field and David came onto the field to meet him, Goliath shouted out, "Come to me! Come to me! And let us have this battle." Wait a minute. Goliath was a professional soldier, professionally trained, professionally armed, with massive experience. As a professional soldier, he would not have simply stayed in one place and say, "Yeah, what you got? Come on, kid." No. He would have been out and taking the fight to his enemy. And then, this is the weirdest thing. Goliath said, "Why did you send a boy to me who comes to attack me with sticks?" Where did that come from? None of that makes any sense. Goliath was led out onto the field. What for? Come to me. Why? You're coming at me with sticks? Oh, wait. None of that makes any sense unless there was a tumor on his pituitary that was making him grow into a giant and giving him the other side effects of that particular condition. They would not have known this 3,000 years ago, but we know it today. There are two incredible side effects to that condition. One is nearsightedness. Incredible nearsightedness. And the other is double vision. Now, all of a sudden, that story begins to click and make more sense. And the shield bearer led him out onto the field. Why? He couldn't see it. Come to me. Why would you say that? Because he couldn't see far away where he was going. He couldn't see where his enemy was. Why are you attacking me with sticks? Sticks. If you had double vision and couldn't see far. All of a sudden, we have these tiny little hints that begin to make a little more sense. And so Goliath went out. Now, Goliath, there was nothing on the shelves inside of the armory that would have been big enough for him. They had to specially make all of his armor. He had leg protectors made of bronze. He had a chest plate made of bronze. He had a helmet made of bronze. He was carrying a sword. He was carrying a shield. He was carrying a javelin to throw and a spear with a shaft as big as a weaver's beam. This was not to throw. This was to stab. How much extra weight was Goliath carrying? Would it be safe to say 100 pounds? Holy smokes. I mean, even if it was 80 pounds, 70 pounds, can you imagine carrying that much extra weight entering into battle? Now, there were three different kinds of soldiers inside of David's day. The first kind was the cavalry. We didn't see them in this battle. The cavalry rode horse or chariots. The second kind was the kind that Goliath was. He was heavy infantry. These were the men who were armored and walked. These were the men who walked and ran into the military battlefield. These were the ones with the helmets and the breastplates and the full armor. These are the ones who carried the extra weapons. That's who Goliath was. Now stop and think about this. If you are an incredibly tall, not necessarily coordinated, heavily armored man with bad eyesight, what did I just describe for you? A very large, slow-moving target. And here comes David. Remember I told you that there were three different kinds of soldiers? The third kind of soldier is what we would call artillery. Now today, we think of artillery as missiles and cannon. Those didn't exist in David's day. What existed were archers and slingers. We don't even think, the slingers don't even exist anymore inside of our world. A slinger, the slingshot that they used were two leather thongs that were attached to a leather pouch. And the slingshot thrower, they would get rocks. Now these rocks were very, very specific. They were not large. They would have been the size of a large marble to get about that size. They were not rough. They were smooth. Oh, oh, oh. And David walked onto the battlefield, and where did he get his ammunition? From the stream where the smoothest rocks were. And he put that stone inside of his sling and he let go. Did you know? No, you didn't know. That stone, when it was released, had the velocity and power of a 45 millimeter pistol. They were deadly. Now, Holden, would I embarrass you? Could you come and help me for just a minute? Okay. I want to give you some perspective on this. Holden, now I know, but would you tell them? How old are you? 11. How old was David when he went out onto the field? He was a teenager. It could have been 2 years older than Holden. Maybe he was 14. Maybe he was 15. It doesn't tell us. All right. Do you know how tall you are now? Mom, how tall do you think he is? 4'8". The average size of an adult male in David's day was approximately 5 foot. Guess how tall David was? About 4'8". David had been out in the field caring for the sheep. He was the youngest of 8 boys. And that meant that he had the most boring job of all. His job was 99% pure boredom and 1% sheer terror as he defended his sheep against lions, bears, other things. This is what 1 Samuel 17 tells us, that he actually had combat with these wild animals. All right, are you ready for this, Holden? David was out in the field caring for the sheep. Do you think he was near home or far away from home? Far. Who cooked for him? Him. He cooked himself. How are your cooking skills? Not very good. How big was David? Do you think that he was fat and strong? No. This was a skinny kid. How fast do you think David was? How fast are you? Pretty fast. Absolutely. Anybody want to try a race with this guy? He will beat you hands down. He will be at the finish line before you even get started. Holden, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I want to give you perspective. When we talk about David and Goliath, this is what we're talking about. A super fast, super skilled, super accurate slingshot artist. And he came and he said, "I'll go fight Goliath." And they said, "Well, that's ridiculous, but okay, here's your helmet, and here's your coat of mail, and here's your sword." And he put these heavy weapons on, and it was ridiculous. He said, "I can't do this. I don't know how to fight this." And he took the one thing that he had, the one thing that he had been equipped with, out of sheer boredom, he knew how to run a slingshot. And he knew how to do it really, really well. And so he stepped out. You know all those times in your life that you've heard about David and Goliath and you had pity? Oh, that poor David, he's going to get crushed. No. No. Think about this. Goliath had a sword. As long as David stayed out of reach of that sword, he was safe. He had a javelin. As long as he was watching the javelin and stepped to the side, he was safe. Goliath had a spear that he could stab with. As long as David stayed out of range of the spear, he was perfectly safe. If I were to take all of Goliath's armor off and have him stand there, what would be the most vulnerable place that you would want to bring an enemy down? Anywhere on his body that he would have been hit, it would have hurt, it would have bled, but it wouldn't have slowed him down. Right here. And so Goliath put all of his armor on and he put his helmet on, and there was one place that was exposed. Right here. Oh, poor David. No. Oh, poor Goliath. What he did not know stepping on the field that day was that he did not stand a chance against this 4'8", fast as a rabbit, deadly slingshot thrower. He didn't stand a chance. Now, how's that for turning a story upside down? Yeah, it was just the opposite of what you and I were raised to believe and to think. It was just the opposite. All right, let's bring this into your life. Into your life, you face those giants and you get to run into them. Guide my feet while I run this race. Guide my feet while I run this race. Guide my feet while I run this race, for I don't want to run this race in vain. You face giants, and you have a choice. You can either run to meet them, or you can go walk away. My favorite verse in this entire passage is the one that simply said, David ran. David did not walk into that battle. He ran toward Goliath because he knew that he was equipped. He knew he could do this. God equips you in ways that you may not even realize to fight the giants that are in your life. And with God on your side, those giants can be brought down. So let's begin this by talking about the earliest Methodists who were here in Spearfish. I love this story. It was in 1883 that the first Methodist preachers began to come down the hill, and here in Spearfish, just off the chart of the gold boom, he found three Methodist families, and they began to meet. And then by 1884, there were four families and five families and six families, and the church began to grow. They began by meeting in living rooms, by meeting in people's houses, but then they grew to a point where they had to have a larger space. And so they finally found the upstairs meeting hall of one of the Spearfish saloons. If you go out this front door and then down two blocks to Wells Fargo, and then west half a block, east half a block, that's where the saloon was, right there on the alley. And on that night, the Methodists gathered upstairs. Well, the saloon was in full tilt downstairs. It never closed. I mean, there wasn't a day it wasn't open. They would simply close for the night and then come back the next morning and start it again. After worship, everybody went home, and eventually the saloon closed. And in the middle of the night, the saloon caught on fire. Now, on Monday morning, the rumor around town was that those Methodists who did not like alcohol had burned the saloon down. It was their fault. But the ones who had been at the fire said, "Oh, no, 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 that's not the case at all. The Methodists were the first ones with the buckets in to fight the fire. They didn't walk away. They ran to meet the giant. They ran to meet the giant." And that was part of our early, early reputation in this community. That's part of why this church succeeded, because it was known as a group that ran to meet the giant. Now, let me bring this into your life. And I want to start with an extremely small, very small, typical thing. Dishes. And you get up in the morning and you have breakfast, and then you put the dishes in the sink. You go and have lunch, and you put the dishes in the sink, and there is an extra glass, and you put them in the sink. Or maybe you pile them in the dishwasher. You have supper, and you put the dishes in the sink, or pile them in the dishwasher. If you do that one day, that's fine. But if you do that 2 days, 5 days, 10 days, you've got a mess on your hands. What are you going to do with the dishes? Are you going to walk away and just let them be, or are you going to run to face the giant? Are you going to go meet the challenge? Well, of course, we all know what the answer to this is. You got to go face the challenge. Whether it's sooner or later, you got to go wash the dishes. And you have been equipped to wash the dishes. All right, now, let's make that larger. Matter of fact, let's make this huge. Let's make this huge. This is the bottle of Coke that I had last night. It's made of plastic. Do you recycle? I recycle. We should all be recycling. I recycle cardboard. I recycle paper. I recycle aluminum. I recycle steel. And I recycle plastic. When you put this out, where does it go? For most of our recycling projects, they stay here in the United States, but not plastic. Do you know where half of our plastic goes? Does anybody know the answer to this? China. For years, 45% of our recycled plastic has been crushed down into blocks. It has been put on those huge cargo ships, and it has been taken to China. There, China has an entire industry based on recycling and reusing this. This bottle is a raw resource, raw materials for China's industries. Do you know what happened January 1st? No, China. China quit taking the world's recycled plastics, because with 1.3 billion people inside of their nation and with a growing economy, they now have enough plastic circulating in their own economy to supply their own industry. They don't need my Coke bottle anymore. Now, do you know what this means? This means that we now in the United States have 45% more of our recycled plastic that we don't know what to do with. And so what's going to happen? Well, if the industry's not there to support it, it's going to go into the landfill. Oh my goodness, our landfills are stressed. Our metropolitan areas are shipping their garbage everywhere, trying to figure out a place. And now we are going to put millions and millions and millions of metric tons of unused plastic into those even more. Now, this just boggles my brain. I have no idea what to do with this. But here's what I know. I have a choice. I can walk away and I can say, it's not my problem. I don't know what to do about it. Not my circus. Not my monkeys. Somebody else's problem. Or I can run to face the giant. I'm just figuring this out. But what it means is that in our house, we're having some real conversations about how do we reduce the use of plastics? How do we find a recycler that will take my Coke bottle? How do we do that? What does that look like? What does that look like? Who is out there in our own American economy who is figuring out something that the Chinese figured out? How do we reuse this? How does this go from being garbage to being raw material? How does this go from being a detriment to our society to a profit to our society? The only way that we'll find out is by running to meet the giant. Yeah. Oh my gosh, this is huge. Now, sometimes the giants are your personal giants. It's cancer. It's heart disease. It's the relationship. It's financial disaster. Sometimes it's the conflicts within our families and our communities. We have these giants. Sometimes the giant is finishing your education or starting a new business. We have these personal giants all the time. And sometimes our giants are social. It's everybody's Coke bottle. I was fascinated inside of the last 2 weeks to watch what was happening down on the Mexican border. To say immigration, United States immigration, is meeting the families who are coming up from the south, and they were separating the families, the adults, from the children. And there was a whole section, this conversation. If you've been watching news at all, you've been seeing this conversation. Fascinating, as one side of the argument says, we have got to increase our security, and the other side of the argument says, but not at the destruction of families. And what you saw inside of our United States was a huge percentage on both sides who stood up and did not walk away. They ran to meet the giant. Now, this issue is not resolved by a long shot. I mean, we've now quit separating the parents and families, but there's still a huge, huge conversation. And when we go into Congress and you see how they're split and it's so hard to talk, oh my goodness, the giants that we together are facing. How are we going to resolve elements of this? We can walk away. Well, it's not my problem. Or somehow, some way, we as a people together can run to meet the giant. What if we bring this down right now into Spearfish? You need to be watching in the months and the years that now lie ahead of us. Are you listening in the conversation? Are you listening in the conversation that says in the United States, we are seeing opioid use huge and off the charts. And now, because opioids are becoming harder to get, we're seeing a resurgence in meth. And with that meth is coming a new drug that they are lacing this with. It's called fentanyl. And what fentanyl does is it increases the power so you can get an even bigger and better high. We're seeing this off to the East Coast. We're seeing this on the West Coast. And we know that it is on its way here. We know that it will be coming to Spearfish if it is not here already. Now, when people come into our community, when they're here, they're wanting to succeed. How do we help them succeed? How do we help families that are dealing with addiction? And oh, by the way, those families, you know, if I were to say, would you raise your hand? How many of your families deal with alcohol addiction, tobacco addiction, opioid addiction, meth addiction? How the hands would go up, because it's our children, our grandchildren, our nieces, our nephews, ourselves that are dealing with addictions. This is why this congregation is so incredibly powerful in saying we believe in Alcoholics Anonymous. Get in here. We believe in Narcotics Anonymous. Get in here. We believe that there's more that can be done. And so there's a new organization, the Northern Hills Sources of Support, SOS, that's being birthed in this community, in this church, and is heading out into the community as fast as it can. To be there as a safety net, because we are not running away. We're not walking away and saying, it's not my problem. We're running to meet the giant. That's who we are. This is what we do. Is together in our faith, we ask the question, what are our giants together, and how do we face them? How do we face them? May it be this week that you realize that God has equipped you in ways that you might not even think of to meet the giants that are in your life. And may it be that you realize that with God's help and the help of others around you, that those giants can come down. May it be that you realize that we are running together to face the giant. Sing with me. Guide my feet while I run this race. Guide my feet while I run this race. Guide my feet while I run this race. For I don't want to run this race in vain. Gracious God, we ask your blessing that you would help us not to walk away, but Lord, to turn around and to face the giant and to run. For the sake of our families, for the sake of ourselves, for the sake of our churches and our communities, Lord, help us to run to meet these giants. Not alone, but surrounded by family and friends and co-workers, surrounded by your presence and love. We ask in Christ's name. Amen. Amen.